Welcome to 167 Hours Beyond Sunday, a companion podcast to the sermons of Crossroads Christian Church in Gray, Tennessee, where we try to go beyond the message and talk about what life looks like in the 167 hours we're not in church a week. I'm your host, my name is Ryan Evans, and today I'm joined by our Connect minister, Patrick Mitchell. How's it going, man?
I want to say fair to middling, but I'm not actually sure what that means, so I'll just say very well. I've heard people say that. Fair to Midland.
Fair to Midland?
Yep. I Googled it, and Google knows. It means you're not really good, not really bad. So, yeah. But no, doing well, coming off Thanksgiving.
Yeah, I hope you had a good Thanksgiving. I know it certainly looked different for a lot of families this season. How did your family celebrate?
Yeah, it was different. We alternate Thanksgivings between my family in Knoxville and Lindsay's family in Savannah, Georgia. So this was a Georgia year. And we were fortunate to be able to stay at a clean friend's home. They were out of town, and we were able to stay there and enjoy that time. And then we ate, because it was Savannah, Georgia, we ate outside, distanced, with a far smaller gathering than normal. So, yeah, pretty good. Trying to be wise, but also enjoy, family as best we could.
And there's a balance there. I really do believe that, because if you isolate to a point where you are just depressed.
Yes.
But the outside approach, God blessed us with great weather this year during Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Which was really nice. I was talking to Ryan Hughes about that the other day, because he spent Thanksgiving with his family outside. Mm-hmm. We actually didn't go to family this year. We went to Framley.
Framley.
We went and spent time with Andrew, Kylie Green, and their new baby shepherd.
Yes. Good people.
Fortunately, they're the isolated ones. I'm the most active of our bunch, so I went and got tested.
Yeah,
and that's a blast.
Yeah, actually, we heard of a friend who, because they didn't really want to see the extended family, they forced them all to undergo tests before they could come, and so they just didn't. I was like, wow, that's a bold move. Let's see if it pays off.
It's a strategy. It's a strategy. Yeah. So here's the $1 million question, Patrick.
Yep.
Dividing our audience, potentially setting you up as an antagonist in many people's hearts. What is the best Thanksgiving dish?
I personally like sweet potato casserole. So, however, for my wife, it is this baked mac and cheese that her grandmother made and that her mom makes and now she makes. And it drives her crazy because our kids hate it.
Really?
They actually call it the throw up mac and cheese.
Oh.
And they bemoan. They're like, is this the throw up mac and cheese? And I'm kind of with them. We're just like Velveeta people. And, sweet potato casserole is where it is. I really like mashed potatoes with corn mixed in.
Yeah.
Like just mix it all together.
The best thing to do is like at midnight after Thanksgiving's over, is to just go in the fridge and just basically make a sandwich of all the leftover sides and turkey.
Mm-hmm. Preach. I could do Thanksgiving without the turkey or the ham. Like I'm good. The sides is where I live. So.
So what's funny about your answer is that it actually mimics me and my wife. My wife, her favorite is sweet potato casserole.
Okay.
Which the way she makes it is more of a dessert.
It is.
Than a side. But it's still great. And mine, my mom makes a fantastic baked mac and cheese.
Does it taste like throw up?
It does not taste like throw up, fortunately. Yeah. That's just kind of odd. So this last Sunday, we started a new Advent series, and Curtis suggested a decent definition of Advent. He said it's a time when Christians learn how to hope through the practice of waiting. So out of curiosity, how are you when it comes to waiting?
Pretty awesome. As long as it's nothing important. I'm great. I feel like I have these different levels, these unspoken levels of how I wait based on how important something is.
Mm-hmm.
Unless it comes to driving, at which point waiting is not a strong suit. like the sign says yield, not stop.
Yeah.
It says merge, not come to a full stop and then maybe turn into the lane.
Yeah.
There may be some things to work through there, but I feel like for the most part, waiting on just everyday things for me tends to be harder than waiting on big things. Like it's almost like I have more peace with God when it comes to the big stuff than just the everyday things.
Huh.
That's what gets to me. It's weird.
That's really interesting to think about. I'm going to talk from weakness this whole episode. I'm Captain Impatient. I'll admit it out loud. I think I do a good job of not like acting on my impatience unless I'm alone. Like, I don't know what made me think of this, but when I first started as in youth ministry, one of our first trips, I knew we were going to have to haul a trailer. Mm-hmm. And I had just never driven with a trailer.
Yeah.
So I hitched it to the back of a 15-passenger van and I just test drove that sucker in the parking lot until I felt comfortable with it. But the one thing is backing it.
Oh, yeah.
And if you're an impatient person trying to learn how to back a trailer, it's not a great, it's a bad time.
Yeah. I actually saw a book for, it was, and the cover of it was how to back up a trailer and all these other things men should know how to do. And I'm like, this feels like an equal opportunity thing to me. I think men and women should know how to back up a trailer.
That's funny. I did figure it out eventually, but my large problem was that I would gun it and I just need to go slow.
Yep.
Go slow, but it was fun.
Yeah.
So Curtis talked about how there was a period of silence, 400 years to be precise, between when Malachi, the last book written of the Old Testament, and when Jesus was born. 400 years is a long time. And he mentioned this. He said, you know, it must have felt hopeless for the Israelites. You know, that's long enough to really doubt, to really struggle. So in a moment of asking way too much vulnerability of you for a public podcast, I ask, can you think of a time when you were in a hopeless waiting phase?
Yeah. Well, and I think, you know, off that question and off the sermon, it's important to grasp just the expansiveness mm-hmm. of waiting and hoping in the history of Israel and the history of our faith. You know, that 400 years of silence really kind of mimics the 400 years of slavery, you know, and then the Exodus after that. And so there's something obviously the Lord's doing. I've had different seasons of waiting and wondering, but one in particular that sticks out was in 2011, which puts you in probably high school.
Like halfway through. Well, no. No, I was like halfway through college.
Okay, good.
Not quite.
You're not that young.
I was just a little bit older than that.
Yeah. But yeah, it was this wondering vocationally for me, which really meant all of life.
Yeah.
Because so much, you know, in your 20s is tied to where you work and what you do. And we'd left the ministry in St. Louis, and we had a baby. Ben had just been born not too long before that. And then Lindsay was all like, surprise, you got me pregnant. And we had no insurance, no job. And we moved in with Lindsay's parents, which is fantastic. Everybody as an adult with a baby should live with their in-laws just to see what they're made of.
Yeah.
And so it really was just this season of like, okay, Lord. I mean, I would wake up and I went and I pressure washed boats at Bass Pro Shop. Huh. And worked at a hotel during the season, you know, mm-hmm. as a guy with a seminary degree.
Yeah.
Which actually may not be that uncommon now that I think about it. But
hindsight.
But just really going, man, what is this going to look like? And of course, through that, we learned a lot about ourselves, and God did more than, you know, we could have imagined, and led us on a road towards, you know, education and ministry that have ultimately led here, you know. So it's obviously you don't see where you're going in the wilderness. You know, you don't see where you're headed in the wandering. You really feel like you're being led by a flame, you know.
Yeah.
And whatnot. So that was our season, and it was tough. It was really hard. There were really hard days, weeks, months, but better for it. You know, really. Yeah.
You know, this seems to be kind of a common struggle amongst Christians, though. I think maybe to an unhealthy degree, we have overemphasized calling amongst Christians. So much so that I think we tend to undervalue the waiting or undervalue mm-hmm. the journey or undervalue, you know, even, you know, you mentioned occupation. I think, yeah. I mean, I know I felt this pressure when I was in high school and in college. I think a lot of people feel it. And maybe this is like calling mixed with American culture, but there does seem to be a lot of find your value in what you do in a career or in your job,
yep.
even though that's not necessarily always the most important thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And for me, I think just as part of my makeup and like, if you do, you know, a strengths finder where it gives you like your top five strengths, my number one strength is belief, which I'm like, what job do you go to? And you're like, you know what? Don't worry. My number one strength is belief. and so for me,
I believe I'm going to get this job.
Yeah. You know, I'm Joel Osteen-ing this thing right through, man, to the top. But for me, it means I have to really like 100% believe in what I'm doing and who I'm doing it for. And it really has hampered me to where there was a season where I was just like, I don't see how anybody does anything other than, you know, pastoral ministry or something that is like very tangibly like of the Lord.
Yeah.
And I had a counselor just really challenge me on that and basically call me a punk, which is what I deserved because he was like, you know, he's like, my granddad put up fences and painted fences. And I think his career was just as honoring as anything I've ever done in ministry and all this stuff. Jeez. And I'm like, you're right. I don't know how to feel that way. And so, yeah, for me, man, that calling, the calling card, you can always play that. Well, I just don't feel called to this, or I do feel called to this. And I look back and man, I just manipulated so many things using God's name in vain in that fashion. For the sake of calling and occupation. Yeah. So yeah, I think it's huge to talk about it honestly, especially, you know, right now with teenagers and college students.
Yeah. And I mean, I love what you said though. It's like, doesn't matter what you do or where you are. In fact, often I'm sure you feel this way sometimes. Like I get so busy sometimes doing church work that I'm like, man, if I did this other job, I could probably do more ministry.
Oh man. I've had a couple friends that, you know, they've left working for a church and they're like, I'll never go back. Cause I do more ministry outside, you know, working this job and meeting these people. It's hard to be fishers of men and women when you're working in the aquarium, you know, that sort of thing. So, yeah, I get that 100%.
Sorry, audience, as we're, you know, dealing with our internal struggles.
We need to talk.
No, I mean, obviously there's a lot of value in what we do. The point that we're making is that when you place all the value in like a, when you can't see ministry opportunity wherever you are, that's the problem.
Right.
Which has nothing to do with my original question, but that's how this podcast goes sometimes.
Yeah.
So Curtis also said, I think a direct quote is, hope is a vision for better days that changes us in the present. So I was curious how that quote hit you. Mm. What do you think that means for us as Christians?
Yeah. I mean, I take it to mean that there has to exist this unseen confidence or conviction that guides us when we're blinded by this fog of desperation or despair or discouragement, all the D words. and I could not help but think of Hebrews 11. I'm going to go, this is not like a pastor hat. This is just where I go. Hebrews 11, the writer, the preacher, whoever it was, talking about, you know, by faith, Abraham did this, by faith, Isaac, by faith, Jacob, by faith, Sarah. And then says all these people were still living by faith when they died.
Yeah.
They did not receive the things promised. Mm. They saw them and welcomed them from a distance. And then I think this is the key phrase, admitting that they were foreigners and strangers on earth. Mm. And again, I go back to that wondering in the exile, you know, way of life. This is not where I belong. I know there's something better. Nobody in that list, you know, in Hebrews 11 got what they were expecting or even what they felt like the Lord had promised them. And yet, I think because they saw themselves as foreigners and strangers on earth, they were able to, you know, take that confidence in the unseen and let them be fruitful with what they could see.
Yeah.
And take the opportunities that were there and just really heed the voice of the Spirit of God. And so even in the New Testament, you know, that language of exiles that gets picked up. I just think, man, if we as Christians, and I don't even want to say as Christians in America because it's worldwide, but I am going to back up and say, I think especially as Christians in America, where it is so easy because we can say our country was founded on Judeo-Christian principles and, you know, we can point to faith of founding fathers or whatever it may be. It's so easy to wrap up those identities and forget that this is not where we belong.
Yeah.
Right? That there is a longing for something in us that even America can't satisfy.
Yeah.
But we try. try really hard.
It's just weird. So there's this weird tension in this where we need to be able to find joy in the journey.
Right.
But also recognize that there is a very good chance we won't experience the destination. Mm-hmm. I mean, based on that Hebrews 11 passage, and you know, it's funny because just recently I was doing some Revelation studying. Just mostly because, just a full disclosure to the audience, it was a book I've avoided for a while, and I was like, I need to stop avoiding this. And there's a lot of really great value in that book. I know we don't preach on it a lot or teach on it a lot, but there's an immense great value. But what's interesting is while I'm studying it is interacting with people who are so obsessed with trying to use it as a map, you know, like, okay, here's where we're going. Here's exactly what's going to happen. And most of those things aren't based in any actual biblical principles or actual words of the Bible. But it is this obsession that I think we have as Christians sometimes to try to, and we've talked about this before, pretend to know what's going to happen.
Sure.
Because we're uncomfortable with not.
Yeah. And it's that, that illusion of control. But I do think, you know, it's in the Exodus. Is it, it's Exodus 33 or around there where we get the word Emmanuel for the first time. You know, Moses basically going to God like, I just need to know that you're going to be with us here. And he goes, I will. I'll be with you. And it's in that wilderness. And I think it's just this constant relearning in the valley of the shadows that God is with us. God is with us. God is with us. And his invitation is, will you be with me? You know, and that we're always living into that invitation. And we just, we learn that better in the wandering than we do on the mountaintops.
Yeah. Well, so to continue along with this, so what did you think when you heard this quote Sunday from Dietrich Bonhoeffer? It says, a prison cell like this is a good analogy for Advent. It says, one waits, hopes, does this or that. Ultimately negligible things. The door is locked and can only be opened from the outside. Advent reminds us that God turns toward the very places from which humans turn away, that Christ was born in a stable because there was no room for him in the inn. A prisoner grasps this better than others. God wants to always be with us wherever we may be. In our sin, our suffering, and death, we are no longer alone. God is with us.
Yeah. See, there's Emmanuel. Like, and that wasn't planned. That's just how it is. When I heard Curtis, you know, say that quote, it made me think of the A.W. Tozer. It goes something like, God won't use someone greatly until he's wounded them deeply or broken them deeply. I don't know how theologically sound that is, because certainly God has used people that have not suffered, you know, greatly. But it seems to bear out in some experience, you know, the people's lives that we look at and we're like, man, I wish I could write like that. Or I wish I had that kind of testimony. And it's like, well, do you really want to go through what they went through to get that, you know, testimony? And, you know, and I think like, would we even know Dietrich Bonhoeffer's name had it not been for this imprisonment and his execution? And I do think this quote, you know, helps us zoom in on what I've called a pervasive miscalculation. And it infects us as Americans, especially, I can't speak for the rest of the world, but it's this false sense of security and control. And I actually mentioned it in my, you know, communion meditation on Sunday, because I think that's what we've seen challenged in us as a nation.
Yeah.
Is that sense of we can be in control.
Yeah.
And, you know, this pandemic from around the world goes, no, you can't.
Yeah.
And the economy can't handle it. And, you know, what if the church doors aren't open? And, you know, all of those things. It's just, you know, race riots, like politics and elections. It just goes, wow, this feels like it's spiraling.
Yeah.
And we are all left in this state of discombobulation because we realize deep down, I can't do anything about this.
Yeah.
And that's really, not really fun. Disjointing.
It's not a fun recognition to make. But you know, like when you think back on several of those members of the Old Testament, when you think through the situations they were in, what they had to go through, the suffering they had to go through, the waiting they had to do, and how ultimately a lot of them didn't, you know, I always sympathize with Moses. Who didn't get to the promised land. Poor guy.
You see that, Moses? I do. You're going to die right here. Sorry.
But you know, there is something to that. And it is interesting to recognize. It almost makes me think of Ecclesiastes in a way. There's a meaningless. It's all, you know, all these things that you've tried to ascribe value to, all these things that you're going to hold on to because you think this gives you meaning, all these things that make you feel comfortable and in control.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Plus. And I love that. And I heard somebody say, just imagine, you know, Solomon in Ecclesiastes is just like this granddad over a cup of coffee, just going, let me tell you something. and it's so true. And, you know, I'm pushing 40 now and just realizing how much that I've thought mattered so much really is somewhat vanity in the scheme of things. But I think for me, you know, that viewing it from, you know, our relationship to the Lord when we're in those difficult times, we're in the prison cells or whatever, and you're experiencing this for the first time, but having a kid changed the way that I read scripture, even changed some soteriology I may have held at a previous time, as to how God saves and as if we know, and really made me go, what does this look like from the heart of, you know, God as Abba Father? And certainly if he's the perfect father and I want nothing more than good for my children, how much more does he want for me and for his children, you know, his sons and daughters? And to realize, man, he's not just like this, you know, divine dictator who decrees things and doesn't care and is emotionless. Like, I bet he wept as God weeps to see Bonhoeffer in this prison cell.
Yeah.
You know, to see him naked in the gallows, hanging to death.
And but that's where the struggle's at, right? Yeah. Though, as humans, when we're in those moments and we're supposed to hang on to hope.
Right.
And I think it is tough in those moments when we're in the hard times, when we're in the waiting to hang on to your number one strength finder strength, belief or faith or whatever you want to call it, hope.
Well, and that's it. That's where it's that Emmanuel, you know, it is God with us. And, you know, it's, I think it was Viktor Frankl and, you know, when seeing this kid hanging in the gallows and somebody saying, where's God? And him saying, he's right there.
Yeah.
You know? He's God with us, and without the enslavements, without the wonderings, we don't get that name, you know, we have Yahweh. And so I think it's significant that is the name that is carried on, you know, from old to new as Emmanuel. Yeah.
So, in the Advent season, we can't help but reflect on the arrival of Christ, the answer to many prayers, the fulfillment of promises, hope in its truest form. So with that in mind, I'd like to finish with this last question. And it's deeply personal. I ask it with respect and appreciation for your continued vulnerability in this media. What role has the hope of Christ played in your life?
Yeah, it's an easy one to
drop on you.
It's a deep question. I feel like it's tough to answer for me in some sense, because I've led I would look at my life and say it's been fairly non-adventurous, non-tragic. The worst things that I've gone through have been the loss of a baby in miscarriage, and then the loss of a dear friend of mine that I grew up with in our early 20s in a hiking accident. And in both of those periods, and I think just in everyday reminders that this world is broken, you know, just broken to the core. I'm drawn back to the longing that I have and the longing we all have for things to be made right. And there may be different ideas depending on someone's background or culture of what that looks like. But for me, it's reflected, like I said a minute ago, in the heart of God as Abba, as Father. And in these moments, knowing I don't have to be consumed with how things are going to be worked out. I just need to be convinced wholeheartedly that they will work out. And, you know, it is that the C.S. Lewis quote that if I find in myself a desire for which nothing on this earth can satisfy, the only explanation is that I was made for another world. And I just go back to that again and again and again. And it's just, I'm like, it has to be true because there is nothing in this world that has yet to satisfy me, mm-hmm. you know, constantly. And there are always things disappointing me. And I feel like, I don't know, like if this were it, there'd have to be something more, you know, this side of death. And I don't know anyone that's found it. And to quote you too, you know, I still haven't found what I'm looking for, like that sort of mentality. So I just really am. I'm convinced. It's even the definition of faith in Hebrews 11 is just, it even feels wishy-washy.
Yeah.
Faith is the assurance of things hoped for. And it's like, well, how do you have that?
Yeah.
And it's just this trust in God that he's really there. He's really real. He's really doing stuff. And you just may not see it.
Yeah.
And going, okay, I got to be okay with that.
Mm-hmm.
That's a shot to my ego.
Yeah. Well, you know, even when Jesus arrived, he really didn't fit in with everyone's plans, and he wasn't the answer that most people expected, but it was better.
Yeah.
And I think that that's what I hang on to, mm-hmm. right? With the, obviously we all share, there are people who are more dishonest and like, I know exactly. That's posturing.
Yeah.
Faith is things unknown.
Right.
So I hang on to this answer,
mm-hmm.
and I hope greatly that it's a better answer than I can imagine.
Yeah. And I love it. Just to finish up my part, going on, you said the word better. Going on in Hebrews 11, you know, the writer says, these are the men and women who hoped for a better country, an architect whose, you know, city can't be destroyed, basically. And mm-hmm. it's just like, man, that image of like, man, there is coming a time and a place and a reality that is so much better than what we think would be best.
Yeah.
That I just go, okay, I can't see it all, but I'm going to be faithful in what I can see and hopeful in what I can't see. And I like, that's it.
Yeah.
And that's Advent.
Mm-hmm.
That is like, okay, we're waiting on the Messiah. And I was listening to something the other day and it was just like, don't hurry past the agony of Advent. Don't hurry past the difficulty of waiting.
Yeah.
And just really press into it right now. You know, the very first text in the liturgy for this year for Advent was, you know, in Isaiah when it's like, Lord, rend the heavens and come down, like rip the skies open and come down and put an end to this.
Yeah.
And we feel that. And like, we need to really sit with that.
Yeah. And for most of us in our lifetimes, the greatest example of that kind of this varies from individual, but like large pressed as a community, this year has been that for a lot of people that hang on to hope and wait and be patient. It's not even been a year yet.
No, so, not even.
Which is crazy to think about. So,
yeah.
So think about, you know, the Israelites in Babylonian captivity or under the rule of Pharaoh. Or...
Yes. Yes. God is not slow in his time.
Goodness. Well, thank you, Patrick, for the conversation today. And thanks all of you for joining us this week. If you're on iTunes and don't mind, please give us a 5-star rating and maybe a review. If you want to keep up with all of Crossroads activity, you can find us on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube. You can find us by searching Crossroads Christian. There are all kinds of content on there for adults, kids, teenagers, specialized for all of you. And if you haven't grabbed one yet, make sure you get one of our Advent devotionals. I know Advent has already started. That doesn't mean you can't jump in now. You know, just catch up on a few days. I think it's a really cool thing in our church together is participating in those devotionals. And even if you're like, for some reason, listening to this podcast in a different state and you just stumbled upon it, go to our website, crossroadsgray.org. And you can actually have one sent to your house. And we'll do that because we believe in Christian community and loving people. So, but more on all that, please make the most of the rest of your 167 hours. Have a great week.